Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
This is Why Always Us. It's your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. Sam Lee's with me. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
And we've got Paul Byas as well. Hi, Paul.
Hello. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks. Sam, you well?
Yeah, all good. I'm looking forward to doing this because I did Sky Sports News this morning for 15 minutes.
You're really pumped, are you?
Well, yeah. I suppose I'm kind of in the zone. So I was like, okay, so it's a paper talk thing. So I was like, yeah, it's going to be Gabriel Jesus, isn't it? And they sent through the running order at 6 a.m. So I looked at it a bit later when I woke up. And it was, okay, Ronaldo, Man United, yeah, okay, Gabriel Jesus. And then the other two items were about cricket. And I was like, oh, shit. I was reading this at about 7:15 this morning. And suddenly I was like, I need to. It was like a comprehension exercise at school. You know, when you get like a text and you read it and then you got to, basically rewrite it in your own words. It was basically that. Like, I like cricket, but I don't know. I certainly didn't know enough to be talking about the subjects I was asked about on national television. But we got through. So yeah, talking about City is easy street. It was fine. Yeah, it was all right because you read the article they're talking about, make a couple of notes so they're fresh in your head, and then, you know, just add a bit of, I don't know, television experience, and it'll go well in the end. I mean, I don't know if they're going to be chopping it up to use on Sky Sports Cricket, but it'd be quite amusing if they did.
Paul, are you a big cricket fan? Or
yeah, that was something that I want to bring up to the table, because I don't know how you, the English guys, love cricket so much. I just don't get it. It doesn't fit into my head.
What are you talking about, mate? You're coming, aren't you? You're coming to you're coming to the 100 on the start of the Premier League season. While Arsenal are playing Palace, we'll be watching.
Well, I'm basically coming under the promise that it's quite a good party to go. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm going. But it's funny because you were like, I haven't even heard of these teams, but I think those teams only existed from last summer. Like, it's literally a completely new thing.
I think that I don't even know like any players, something like that, or just any rule. But yeah, I'm just going there for the fun.
Yeah, if the ball comes towards you, catch it.
Yeah, good.
Well, count for
put your point down quickly.
Yeah,
and catch it. Yeah.
If you want to read actual football stuff and not hear us babbling about cricket, then you can read everything on City on The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManCityPod to sign up. You'll get these podcasts as well without the ads, so it's well worth the money. Go to theathletic.com/ManCityPod to sign up now. Going to talk transfers today because, I mean, why wouldn't we? Sam, let's start with... I was going to start with the incomings, but since you mentioned him already, let's talk about Gabriel Jesus, because this one to me seems like... genuinely, I've always said for a long time, City have been pretty bad at selling players and that they don't get the value that I think the player is worth a lot of the time. And a lot of the other times, it's largely because they've kind of kept older players until they're, you know, at the end of their careers. So this one to me feels like a good deal all round. It's one of the first times I remember City selling for a good value, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's one of those, like I say, good deal all round, because it's weird because I think it's cheapish for Arsenal, or a good deal for Arsenal. But also, I think 45 million, and I know like add-ons have been reported. I know. That seems to be the latest Twitter thing, trying to find out if there's 10 million in add-ons, but I don't think so as far as we're concerned. But, you know, we'll try and find out. But in terms of the 45 million in and of itself, I reckon that's about as much as City would have ever got for him if they were ever going to sell him. Because I know that a few years ago, it was always the case that they really like him. But, you know, if somebody came along with a big offer and they could go and get Harry Kane or João Félix or... I can't even remember the targets over the years, then they would have done it. And this goes back like 3 years. But the figure I always remember having in my head for then was like 90 million. And he's a player like Sterling, who if he's playing really well, then City don't want to sell him anyway. But if he's not playing really well, then clubs around Europe look and go, well, what am I getting here? So I don't think they were ever going to get 90. I mean, I'm not sure they'd have even got 60. So I kind of feel like 45 million is about right, even if he had like 2 years left on his deal. I feel like that's as much as they would have got. And to get that when he's only got a year left, when, like, I don't know, maybe the circumstances are different because Mane's older. I suppose that's it. But Sadio Mane going for, is it like 27 million when he's got a year left on his deal?
Yeah.
I think to get 45 for Jesus is really good business. But yeah, for Arsenal, I said this on Sky this morning, and this has been clipped up and put on Twitter. So maybe I'm going to get Arsenal fans complaining to me, although I've not seen it so far. But I was like, look, don't expect him to be an amazing clinical goal scorer, but I do think he's a really good signing. And basically, I think that's how it goes for them. And as for City, you know, Paul can talk about his kind of legacy as much as anybody, or David, you can. I think everyone kind of got the same opinion on Jesus, really.
Yeah, I was going to ask Paul, what do you think his legacy is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that probably when he arrived here at City, probably a lot of people expected him to be like the guy who extended Aguero's number 9 role, the guy that was supposed to take over this. But I think he was never that. He was never that. But he will come down as probably one of the best grafters that I think Pep has had since he put a foot in Manchester, which is not a small thing to say. I think that if you speak to any player, to any executive, to any person involved to the first team unit, everyone is just going to praise Gabriel Jesus just because of his attitude on and off the pitch, how he behaved when he doesn't play. Then when he played, I mean, he had some big, big games against Liverpool, against Real Madrid, I can remember, at the Santiago Bernabeu, and then at the Etihad 2 seasons ago or 3 seasons ago. So I think that Gabriel Jesus had really, really big, big moments in Manchester City, but it came down into a moment that it makes sense, as we discussed like in earlier podcast, from all the sides, just to take another path, take another step. And I think it was quite an interesting point, the one you raised about the price tag, because it explains a bit where City is right now in terms of, I think that there is a brand with players that have played at Man City that just increased the value. Just look at not just Gabriel Jesus, but Gavin Bazunu, that hasn't even played for Man City. And the club has been able to sell him for 15 or 13 million, I think. That Darko Giabi, who is going to Leeds on the Calvin Phillips deal, is a player that probably would have never played under Pep Guardiola. You never know, but he hasn't even played a first in game, and he's leaving for 5 million. So it's kind of, City now is at this stage that they can put value to the player just for having them under their ranks. And that's a positive thing in terms of sellings. And I think that Jesus proves that, being like on the last year of contract and getting a good value deal, in my opinion. Just if you ask like anyone in Spain, which is the fair price for a player that is 1 year away of his contract ending, I mean, no one would believe that any club can get like 50 million euros like City got now with Gabriel Jesus. So I think it's a pretty good deal.
Just to give you an idea, Paul, of what I was thinking back in 2017. So Jesus had been there, what, about a year? Well, less than a year by that stage. He joined in he actually arrived in the January, didn't he, of the season before. Aguero was, he broke the goal-scoring record against Napoli on the 17th of October. On the 14th of October, City played Stoke at the Etihad, and they beat them 7-2. Jesus scored twice. And I tweeted during that game, can't wait until Gabriel Jesus breaks Sergio Aguero's goal-scoring record, which is possibly one of many hot takes that I've had that have never come to pass. But you could see at the time that's where things were headed. And, you know, it's not headed that way, has it, Sam? But he's been he has been good value for City down the years.
Yeah, definitely. Like Paul says, everyone speaks really highly of him. And like, as I'm sure if City had the choice, they would have got him to stay another year. And to be honest, we're talking about their options on the right-hand side. Obviously, it's a good thing for Cole Palmer to come through. Like, you can't keep saying you want young players to come through and then wish there was two senior players in the position. So it's a good thing for Palmer to come through, especially if it's on that right side. But you'd probably look at it and go next season, go, it'd be good to have Jesus around. I don't think any City fan would be desperate to get him out. And I think Guardiola would love to have him around next season as well.
But look at what Paul was saying a minute ago. The games he's played in. Like, he's played against Liverpool. He's played against Real Madrid. Those big games, Guardiola's turned to Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Like to be able to have that guy around, and that's the thing. That's why everyone loves him, I think, because I think I've said this after he started in that Liverpool game in the Premier League, having not started a Premier League game since the end of December. Was it that Brentford game on the 29th?
Yeah.
So it's like over 3 months of not starting a Premier League game. I was the only player in the City squad who could do that is him, I think. Just in the sense that he's not going to complain about it. He's always going to give his best. And that's why, that's my point about it'll be ideal to have him around, because he's a great guy to have around and he's not going to get pissed off even though he wants to play. And when he does play, he gives 100% and all of this kind of thing. And so it would be great to have him as an option on the right wing next year. But yeah, it didn't pan out that way. And I suppose if a player leaves and you're talking about what a good person they were and good attitude and stuff, you know that something's lacking in terms of the actual contribution on the pitch. And it's probably because, like you say, when he first came, he was scoring goals left, right and centre. I remember even scored a goal on his debut, was it? There was offside, but he's making all those right movements. And was it in the same position as the Aguero debut goal would have been? You know, Aguero... Oof, not the one from outside the box, but Aguero's one was at the back post, wasn't it, against Swansea? And that was Swansea as well. So it was kind of, okay, this guy is magic. And you've also got the young teenager coming from Brazil. It was almost like a fairy tale kind of thing. You know, very, very difficult to live up to that.
There was a couple of hints in that season, though, that his relationship with the offside law might be a bit sketchy. I think also that season, I think he scored a late winner against Spurs that was ruled out, and a late winner against United that was ruled out.
I don't remember those ones, but yeah.
The offside
thing didn't help him, did it? And look, let's be honest. Jim from Man City Tactics was saying, he replied to my tweet on Friday night saying his run at the end of the season put 15 million on his price tag. And I certainly feel like those four goals against Watford, and obviously, you know, playing against Madrid and playing against Liverpool and scoring against Liverpool, I think they help. But I think those four goals really changed the narrative on Jesus, because he could be frustrating, couldn't he? We're talking about the offsides and the finishing and not being consistent. And so when, on the Friday afternoon, when it came out that Arsenal were interested, I think a lot of people were a bit kind of nonplussed by it, or a bit like, oh, okay, well, yeah, we'll see. And then he scored four against Watford the very next day. And then I think everyone's like, oh, we love Gabby, he's so good, like, we need to keep him, like, we should sell. Like, I saw loads of people, and maybe this is just the kind of the more football Twittery accounts that are like, we should be selling Sterling instead.
Yeah, the immediate post-match reaction sort of stuff.
Yeah, there was loads of that, but I do think his form at the end of the season did mean that the kind of the summing up of his City career has been a bit kinder, because if he didn't have had that, I do think they'd have been a bit more, well, it wasn't good enough, you know, just because people were speaking through the frustration that they could feel when watching him play. But like I say, it'd have been great to keep around the City for another year in a perfect world. And I think he's a really good signing for Arsenal.
Yeah, Paul, I mean, obviously, he'd moved wide for last season. And I think it speaks volumes as well that without a recognised centre-forward, he hadn't been able to kind of make that position his own. With Alvarez and Haaland coming in as well, it doesn't feel like it would be a huge loss. Is that unfair on him?
It's kind of unfair, because I think that both players, Haaland and Julian Alvarez, that are coming in, they are not like Gabriel Jesus. I don't see them as of now. Of course, Haaland is not. But Julian Alvarez, I think that he's a player that likes more to roam through the middle. He likes to drop into the lines. I think that Gabriel Jesus, well, he wanted to play on the wing. He felt comfortable on the last season just to start from wide positions. So I think that we or City are getting different kind of players. And probably just Gabriel Jesus' legacy, probably it's going to be just time is going to give more credit to him in that regard, because I think that it's not easy to find players with that kind of discipline or just work ethic, plus in the front line, where nowadays it's so important to press in a certain way and just to follow the instructions just to avoid the build-up from the back. So yeah, let's see how it pans out. I think, just as Sam was saying, that in a perfect world, just there is no manager in the world that wouldn't like to have a striker like Gabriel Jesus, who is so diligent. He just follows the instructions and has quality on his feet. But I think that City is kind of well covered with Haaland and Julian Alvarez, to be honest.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's talk about incoming, Sam, because it seems like City are operating like a nightclub and it's one out, one in, because Jesus out for around about 45 million, Calvin Phillips in for around about 45 million. This one, though, seems like an absolute steal.
Yeah, I just because of, well, look, we kind of had this conversation on Five Live yesterday, didn't we? And I think I was asked how have City managed to get it so cheaply. The one thing I didn't mention in all the stuff about him, you know, being an England international and the City tax and yeah, which means that obviously whenever City want to sign a player, the club go, okay, well, you know, you we put this much on, and that's why City in recent years have. Basically, why they've looked at so many buyout clause options, because clubs, you know, think they can put the prices up or put the prices up at the last minute or whatever, and see they've had to lay down a marker in the market in recent years and say, well, we're not going to pay that, just so clubs don't think, oh well, what, it's City, they'll pay anything. I suppose 100 million last year kind of undid that slightly. But with Phillips, the thing I didn't mention is I think there was going to be a buyout clause in his contract if Leeds had got relegated. Now, I don't think there's, you know, looking at it from the outside, the fact that Leeds didn't get relegated and they were looking at selling him for a certain amount, which was probably about a bit more than half of what they did sell for him, you'd think Leeds would say, okay, well, it's back on the open market now. So yeah, we want 60, we want 70. But I'm guessing, and Paul, you might be able to add more, and hopefully by the time we write about the deal, we'll be able to say more. But I mean, Leeds seem to have been happy to get an extra 20 million on top of the buyout clause and call it quits. I'm not sure why they've agreed to a fee that Leeds fans certainly don't seem happy with.
It felt to me like City had come in with like one of their first offers expecting it to be negotiated up, and Leeds had gone, yeah, all right, and it's kind of like stunned everybody.
I think it was kind of what Sam was saying. I mean, there, for what I heard and what I understand, there was a release clause in case Leeds was going down. It was close to 24 million, 25 million, around that. So that was pretty cheap. And I think that this fact made like the possibility of Phillips leaving Leeds looming around his head quite a lot. And he has wanted to go to City. He has been attracted, I mean, he was attracted in the past by some quotes that he said in the past, by Pep Guardiola style, but by Man City style. And I think that he made his mind up quite quickly in the final months of the competitions, seeing like, well, if we would go down, City would be a good possibility for me. His camp felt that City was would be open to welcome him. So since that possibility started being like a real thing, I think that Phillips kind of had like his mind set up. And that was a big part of the deal. That was a big part. Then Leeds, knowing that, they avoided this kind of release clause, and that Phillips wanted to leave and probably he wasn't going to extend like his contract or just sign a new deal, probably just doubling what the release clause was, potentially, was a good deal for them. And they accepted it. City is getting a really good player, which is English, that for City, that is good in terms of like the home ground players that they need to have. So it's a pretty good deal for City. And I guess that for Leeds, knowing that this was his player's wish and they didn't want, I guess, to end bad with such a Leeds player, such a born player in the City and stuff. So yeah, I think that's how the thing just panned out at the end.
Yeah, all for less than an entire weekend of tickets to Glastonbury as well. 57.9 million, that was, I believe. What role will he have at City, Sam? Because rival fans are suggesting bench warmer as backup to Rodri. And I think that is... I like Phillips, and I think that's underselling him a bit.
Well, yeah. But I think it's understandable why people think that. I think some City fans might think that as well. I mean, there's two things that make me think that, bench more might be the kind of narrative for the next season. And one is, it's probably a mix of journalism stuff and the actual football. But I've done a lot of articles when players come to City, and I've seen a lot of articles actually and edited them from other clubs years back when players signed for other teams. And it's, this player's signing for this club, and this club are really good, and this player's really good. And here's the coach that he worked with, or here's the coaches that he's worked with here and there. And this is the coach that brought him through, and this is the people that know him personally. And they all say, he's a great guy, he wants to learn, he's a great player, he's going to, in this case, Man City with great players, great manager. It's a perfect mix, and he's going to be amazing. Now, I did that last summer with a few people who'd worked with Jack Grealish, done it before with Cancelo, which, to be fair, there were some people who'd seen Cancelo and were like, it might go the other way. It might not work out so well. And it was close to not working out so well, but obviously in the end it has gone brilliantly. But so on that hand, I've got the experience of, I'm writing these articles all the time saying these guys are going to be great. And on the other hand, you've got every time Cancelo, Grealish, basically, you know, everyone we've talked about, taking a year to settle in. So I was writing this article with quotes from Neil Redfern, which Oliver Kay did the interview with him, and Neil Redfern worked with Phillips in the Leeds Youth Academy, and he gave him his senior debut when Redfern was Leeds manager like 8 years ago. And there's loads of quotes. Yeah, he's this, that, and this, and this, and he can do this, and this. And it's really exciting. But I just know from kind of bitter experience that he's probably not going to show his best form in the first season. Maybe he does, but we know how it is with Guardiola players coming in at City. It takes a while to adapt. So there's that. And the second thing is, I remember when Nathan Ake signed, and I was thinking, because everyone was like, they're playing 40 million for him to sit on the bench and blah, blah, blah. And look, fourth choice centre-back is different to kind of...
to what Phillips will be, yeah.
Second choice holding midfielder, or just, you know, rotation option with the others. But I remember thinking with Ake, yeah, well, it's a pandemic season. There'd be loads of injuries. There'd be obviously COVID problems. He'll get plenty of opportunities. But he hasn't really. And like I said on last week's podcast, it took him a year to settle in, which was kind of low key because he didn't play that much anyway. And then I looked at the fact that, you know, City tell their players when they come in, I don't know if they would have done it with Haaland, but I know they've done it in the past with top players coming in. Look, don't expect to be playing like 60 games this season because of the competition and because of how Guardiola uses the squad. But I'm thinking in Phillips' case, probably 30. If you get more than 30, you'd be happy. Because Zinchenko, Ake and Fernandinho became very much the kind of backup options last season. Like, very capable players in the case of Ake and Zinchenko, and obviously Fernandinho had stood a bit in terms of age-wise and mobility. But it became very easy for Guardiola just to forget those players who played much more the year before in terms of Zinchenko and Fernandinho. And they were just like, okay, well, I'm going to go with the players we've got, which is Cancelo plays all the time and Rodri plays all the time. And so I think the challenge for Phillips will be to get more than 30 appearances. But I do think it's one that he can do because, like we say, being another midfielder is not the same as being one of four centre-backs. And I also think that Phillips coming in, it's not quite the same as Fernandinho, it's not quite the same as Ake, and it's not quite the same as Zinchenko, because it's obvious that Guardiola is now, or City are now, looking for players who can maybe contribute more. Because I think if you look at the people who played the most for last season, in terms of outfielders, it was Rodri and Cancelo. And maybe that was, I don't know if that's 50%, 60%, 70%, because they were so good, and they were so good. But maybe also Guardiola thought, there's a bit of a drop here, which I don't necessarily agree with. I think when Zinchenko comes in, he's good. But maybe Guardiola was thinking, there's a bit of a drop here if I don't play these guys, and I don't want that drop. So all of a sudden, now if you've got Phillips and you've got Cucurella, who should be, you know, new guys coming in doing well, then you've got more flexibility there. But, you know, that said, Rodri is brilliant. You know, I give him player of the season for me. So it is going to be difficult to dislodge him. And then, like, Phillips does give you loads of options. I know I'll talk for about 10 minutes here.
I was going to say, Paul, like, in terms of options, it's not necessarily to replace Rodri, is it? He could play alongside Rodri as well. I mean, as much as we said last season, you know, if Rodri gets injured or he needs to be out of the team for a long spell, then City could be in trouble. And I guess Phillips would solve that problem. Yeah. There is also the option that they can play together.
Yeah, plus last week when Jim was here, I think that we discussed a lot about this double pivot that Man City like started using in some games of last season. So I guess that Phillips would fit perfectly on that kind of idea. Then there's like the starting point that, of course, there's no holding midfielder in the world that could start ahead of Rodri at Man City right now. So, I mean, that's the thing that we have to acknowledge. But yeah, I think that Phillips can act in this double pivot. He can play like more forward. I don't see Rodri going forward to advance his position, because I think that Rodri now is in a position that he really knows how to read the game, how to put himself in place on the defensive transitions, and that is hard to learn under Pep. So I think that he's got that now, and he is not a player to play as a number 8 or as a number 10. But yeah, I think that Phillips gives like plenty of options there. I don't see him either as a centre back, because I think that City has enough options just to go and try again with a converted midfielder as a centre back. We've had enough of this, I think. So yeah, I think that he adds a lot of flexibility. And yeah, just as you were saying, for what I know, Rodri ended up last season quite tired, like in terms of like from the muscle point of view, he was one of the players that needed the rest, like with one of the most needed guys. Phillips will avoid those kind of problems now. So yeah, I think it's a player that can fit and can fill a lot of gaps for City's squad right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned like Rodri not maybe pushing as far forward, Paul. How else will we see him smacking goals in from the edge of the box? It surprised me when I watched kind of like the review of the season, just how many times Rodri got on the end of something at the end of the box and just smashed it in.
Yeah. But that's part. I think that's part of how good he reads the game, like on the defensive terms, because he knows when he can push a bit up. He knows. He knows now, just how to play under like the positional style that Pep wants, and that allows him just to go on the edge of the box at some point of the game and just try his luck, which we have seen that he has quite a good talent doing that.
Yeah, you mentioned Cucurella, Sam. Paul, is there any more movement on that? Are we expecting any movement on that soon?
Yeah, I'm expecting something this week. It's one of the things that I have on my list to be on top of this week. As far as I know, there's not a new breakthrough so far. The big interest is like still there, and all the parts, including like the players camp and City, are pushing in that process just to pull out the signing, like every signing requires. And I'd say that probably we should expect an ending, like it happened with Phillips and Gabriel Jesus. Agreement with one player coming in and agreement with one player coming out. In this case, probably the normal thing or the planned thing probably would be that Zinchenko is the guy coming out, because that would give a gap to Cucurella to fill in. But yeah, I think this week and the next one are going to be key for Cucurella to see if he still is happening or not, which I think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Sam, if City get this one over the line and it's done and dusted, and that's Haaland, Phillips and Cucurella in this summer, Alvarez to join as well, is that it, do you think?
Yeah, seems so. You know, City are generally pretty... We say set in their ways, it sounds quite negative, but they normally go into the window knowing exactly what they want. They don't generally adapt too much if they don't get their target. They don't normally come up with ideas halfway through the window. I'm trying to run through my mind now of examples. Obviously last year, when they didn't get Kane, they thought about the Ronaldo thing briefly when that was offered as kind of a desperation thing. I think 2020 when they signed Diaz, that was more of a this summer we're going to get somebody. Because obviously 2019 they wanted Maguire, didn't happen. They didn't go and get anybody else, didn't/couldn't. But then the year after they were like, okay, if we don't get Koulibaly, we are going to end up with somebody. So that's what they did. But that, you know, that was when they decided they were desperate to get a certain position. It wasn't halfway through the summer going, oh shit, we need this. I know obviously people are thinking Jesus and Sterling to go out, but we talked about this before. I don't think there's any winger on the agenda. I don't think it's something that they've thought about. I don't think they would be desperate enough at some point in the summer where they suddenly go, oh shit, you know, guessing in the sense of I'm trying to anticipate what might happen. Like maybe if Mahrez gets injured or something in preseason, he can't play for a year. Maybe then they're like, oh God, we need to do something. But you know, the way City work as well, you know, it's the classic Guardiola press conference thing, isn't it? It's like, we're happy with the players we've got. Even, you know, we'll stay as we are. Normally that's the answer in December, January, isn't it? When fans are like, oh, we should get this, we should get that. And he's like, no, we're going to stay as we are. So yeah, long story short, I don't think so.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Paul, you suggested Zinchenko out for Cucurella to come in. Sam suggested, obviously, Sterling may still leave towards Chelsea. We don't know what's going to happen there. I meant to ask last week when you mentioned it, and I completely forgotten. A few people picked me up on it on Twitter. Why does City need to sell before they buy? We spent so long last summer talking about the funds being available for Kane, and you know, if they wanted to do it, they had that the money was there. We always talk about the squad feeling like it's too small as well, like it just needs more. Like it's got a lot of quality in there, but sometimes there's not enough numbers in there. So why does it need to be that they need to sell before they can buy?
So basically, that is because of numbers, because of money, because City doesn't have like unlimited funds. And at the end of the day, what Ferran Soriano wants and what Chiqui Begiristain wants is to close up the numbers and present like a balance that they can show that City is like a sustainable business. They invested a lot of the funds that they have on Haaland because it was like the number one priority, top target. Of course, they wanted the number nine. They got it. But just to complete like all the deals, they needed the help of cash coming in. I think that Gavin Bazunu has helped on that. Gabriel Jesus will help on that. And all the outgoings will help to allow the club to make more signings. It's just basically, it's as simple as that. They needed to recover funds from Haaland investment. And I think that they are doing pretty well. And there's something happening which is not very usual at City, that the plans on the transfer window are kind of happening. So everything is going as City was expecting, which is something that we haven't seen for the past 2 or 3 years, for sure.
Yeah. Sam, the other question I want to kind of ask about all this as well is, Do we kind of have to accept that there's only really Premier League clubs who can who have the money that City want for their players, in the case of like Sterling and Jesus, for instance?
Well, yeah, exactly. In the case of Sterling and Jesus, you've got teams in the UK, well, I was going to say the UK, but in the Premier League, who are trying to aspire to be City's level. Because, yeah, I guess the other clubs who would have the money for City players, I mean, even at the minute, it's weird, isn't it? Because like I said before, when they're playing well, City wouldn't sell them and they'd be worth loads of money. So how much Sterling would have been worth to City at the end of the 2018-19 season? It would have been absolutely loads, you know, obviously before the COVID and the market depreciation and all of that. But yeah, so the only overseas clubs that could really afford City players are probably, I'm going to just say Real Madrid, actually.
Yeah.
Because I'm talking about the City players who are on form. So, but now nobody could afford De Bruyne.
Yeah.
And at the moment, because of how the market is and stuff, like Barca are a shambles. There's obviously the Bernardo Silva thing, which Paul wrote brilliantly about at the weekend. like 80 million at least or whatever. But yeah, teams could afford that, but it doesn't seem to be, you know, there just doesn't seem to be a market and stuff. So yeah, when you get to this kind of mid-range player, you do see the Premier League clubs coming into it. But then thinking about it, the only players like this, like top big name players who have left City in the last few years, have all had a year left on their contract.
Yeah.
Sane and now these two.
Yeah.
So it does go to show that wages wise and also generally their performance dictate that, yeah, it's just very difficult to get players out of City. And I know, God, we kind of feel like we need to dance around talking about money with City, because it's like if you make any kind of allusion to the fact that City spend a lot of money or pay a lot of money in wages, it feels like you're going to get thrown into the blue moon thread again, and God knows it's nice to stay out of that, but at the end of the day it's very difficult to buy players from City because of those reasons, and obviously then because they play so well, it's just impossible. Like De Bruyne plays so well and he's so good, like what amount of money could get De Bruyne out? And the COVID situation around Europe means there's not so much money around anyway. So yeah. Difficult.
Do you see movement on Sterling, Sam?
Yeah. I was speaking to somebody last week who reckons Jesus and Sterling are both done. Now, we're all very cautious of that word done in the transfer industry because it could mean anything. But it certainly seems to be where that one's heading. As far as I know, the expectation is that Sterling is going to go. That's the expectation around City. But that's all I've got at the minute. Need to add some meat on the bones of that as the summer goes ahead. But and obviously now he's on his holiday, he's had his break and stuff. But we've talked about the Sterling situation so much and not wanting to sign a contract in January in case he wasn't playing. He's not been playing. Wants to go to a top club. We've just talked about how difficult it is for top clubs to afford City players. Chelsea are there. They're exciting prospects. It's as good a move as he could get other than Liverpool. But I know people are saying he should run his contract down and have a pick of clubs, but what is his pick of clubs? If he had his pick of clubs now, there'd be more at the minute. And also, Chelsea are a really good option. So I don't blame him for taking that if it did come about.
Yeah, I've just realised that the word done could mean either way in this context, where if he said Sterling's done, then he'd say he's finished. He's not entertaining the thought of this transfer anymore. So the word done could literally mean anything in this case.
maybe, but no, that's not... I can safely say that wasn't the context.
That wasn't the context, one,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying there's an agreement with Chelsea. I think, you know, it was the liberal use of done where it's like, yeah, that's the expectation. But that's why you've got to be careful with the old transfer window language.
Yeah. And Paul, Bernardo to Barcelona, it just isn't happening.
Well, yeah, I think the feeling on the article was like I was saying, it was off. I mean, what can I say right now is that there is no offer from Barcelona because they cannot make it. And they just can't right now, and they just won't today, tomorrow, or the next day. I'm not saying that something mad can end up going, but I still think it won't happen. I think it won't happen. Just I said last week that my feeling was that Bernard was staying, and it is still my feeling from what I get from people at City.
Is he okay with that? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that we saw last season that he was quite okay with that. He will wait until the very end of the transfer window to see what happened. I mean, what we get from him is that he is quite relaxed, he's calm, he knows what happened, as I was saying, last summer, and he realizes that if something has to happen, it will be on other people's hands. So now I guess that he will be enjoying his holidays and he will report back on July 11, as all the players are expected to. So yeah, he's quite calm. I mean, I think that he saw last season that things ended up panning out quite well for him. So he's going to give it some patience from what we get from his camp. And just let's see how the summer ends.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick out a detail from that piece as well, Paul, because I was interested that City tested the waters with a contract extension.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, City was seeing, like everyone else, like you and me were seeing, that, well, how Bernardo Silva was playing. I mean, his best game, and he looked so happy, which was back then like an unlikely thing, analyzing how things went like on summer. So basically what City did was like spoke to his people to check out and test the waters and see if they could make something to reflect this happiness. Feedback, of course, was great. And everyone was saying like how happy Bernardo was, like footballing wise, but also like enjoying life. On this moment, which was like January, something like that, that there was like a feeling among the players that City style was perfect for him, for Cancelo, just to shine, just to just show the best of those kind of players, and that there wasn't any club in the world that could provide that. But at the end, all the parts decided that the best thing to keep that Bernardo's good mood was to stay as they were, same contract, same conditions they have, and just keep enjoying his football and let's see what the industry brings for them.
Yeah, it runs until 2025 as well, so there's no immediate rush to get him signed up to an extension.
Exactly, there's no rush, and from his point of view, there's no point in extending it. But the good thing is, with 3 years left, I was thinking if there was two, you'd probably be looking at a scenario where next summer you'd be like, he's probably going to go, because you can't go for two, you can't go two, three summers and wanting to go and not be able to. And then, have a contract running down, like, because all of a sudden, if you had a year left at the end of next season, you'd think finally Barca would be like, okay, well, here's like 50 million euros or whatever, and they'd be able to make it happen. But with three years left, it's good for City fans that there is still like a lot of security there in terms of the contract situation. Because basically, if it wasn't, I think it'd be more likely that he'd leave next summer. But without that, you've still got teams that want to be able to afford him.
Yeah. Right, we're going to finish with a little game based on the Athletic article this week about picking a five-a-side team. First off, we're going to have a little draft competition between the three of us to pick a five-a-side team from City's squad. So first off, we have to lay down the five-a-side centre rules so we know which players are the best to pick, because you're not going to get someone who's good in the air if you're not allowed the ball overhead height, which you're not. Slide tackles also not allowed. Each team must have a goalkeeper. They can't come out of the area. I'm going to add a little one here that distribution is underarm throws, please. No kicking the ball. And outfield players not allowed in the area.
As a goalkeeper who regularly launches it down the other end of the six-a-side pitch.
Because I'm not great with my feet, mate. You've seen me play with my feet.
Yeah, well, we're not picking you, mate. Don't worry.
Yeah. Outfield players not allowed in the area, but they can score from anywhere that is not the area. So, we're going to pick in... basically, I've decided the fairest way to do this is to stick in alphabetical order of surnames so nobody can accuse me of favouritism. So we'll go for Paul, then Sam, then me. You can pick whatever position you like. You've got to have a goalkeeper. Paul, your first pick. Who are you having?
Cool. There we go. I'm probably going to have like some tough calls or just some, just hot takes. But I'm going to have Ederson on goal, of course, because you have to take him.
Hold on. Are we doing one player at a time?
It's one player at a time, mate. Yeah, you can't...
Okay. Sorry. So then my fault. I'm going to start with then Bernardo Silva. Bernardo Silva for me.
Oh, I thought I was thinking Bernardo was my first pick, you know.
There you go.
This is really on the spot, and for the sake of not letting this podcast go on for ages, this is mad, because I had this conversation with Nadim last week when I had to pick it. So I was like, I'll pick this team, what do you reckon? And De Bruyne wasn't in it, and then after speaking to him, he was kind of like, well, who's stopping De Bruyne? So I'm going from not picking him and thinking about small spaces and, you know, technically gifted and running a lot and all those little things, I'm just going to go with De Bruyne.
Right, okay, so that takes De Bruyne and Bernardo off the table for me. A good five-a-side team needs a good goal scorer, so Haaland's going in there, mate.
There you go. Fine. Okay.
So, over to you, Paul.
Yeah, I'm going to Phil Foden now.
Fuck off.
Bernardo and Phil Foden, yeah. And then all the rest for you.
Good luck,
yeah.
Sam.
Good luck.
Yeah, but that was my first choice midfield. You know what? As well, when I put my team on Twitter last week, loads and loads of shouts for two players I hadn't really considered. But you know what, actually? No, I'm going to do it. This is ridiculous because these are two guys I didn't put in my first draft, but here we are. De Bruyne first pick and Mahrez second.
Okay.
The more people talked about Mahrez, the more I thought, yeah, okay.
Makes sense. Now, the problem is you've got creative players and I've just got an out-and-out goal scorer so far, but you haven't picked anybody defensively. So since you're taking the creative players off the table, I'm going to go straight in there and go for... You see, my gut instinct was to say Ruben Dias because he dives in and blocks things and, you know, just gets in the way of stuff all the time. But this is a five-a-side game. And you want a little bit. You don't want a defender who just defends, do you? You want somebody who can stick a foot in and can play it a little bit. So I'm going to go for Cancelo.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, Cancelo was the other one who got a load of mentions that I hadn't even really thought of.
Yeah, probably he's not the guy. You cannot use him like as a defender because you cannot put Cancelo like as the guy who holds the whole defense. And probably if you want to put like some attacking midfielder in there. There's just no room for everyone. So that's why I didn't choose him. But yeah, I was considering him. Now I'm going to do like what just David did. Basically just look for a guy who can stand in behind and just cut passes and read the lines and stuff. But I'm not going to go for a centre-back. I'm going to go for Rodri.
We're basically picking the same team. Rodri was my defender.
Sorry,
did
man.
You see this? No, I wasn't going to pick him next, but I put my team on Twitter last week.
Yeah. I saw that.
Rodri was my centre back.
That's what I'm going to do.
That's interesting. Okay, well, I'm still not going to pick defenders and goalkeepers. I'm going to shore up the team with another small spaces guy, and I think perfect for De Bruyne. I'm going to go with Gundogan.
Yeah.
In midfield with him.
But you might. I have my eye on Gundogan for my next pick, to be honest with you. So, what I'm a little bit worried about is that my team doesn't have anybody really controlling the middle. And I think the best option I've got left for that is possibly Grealish. I'm gonna pick Jack Grealish.
Well. Now I'm at this point that I don't know if I have to choose a good like. Ederson on the goal or a striker in there. Kind of because there are not many strikers in there too. But yeah, just I'm going to go for Julian Alvarez. Just give it a go.
Whoa.
Wild card pick.
Foden and Bernardo. And try Julian Alvarez in there.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm going to need a defender now. And what? Rodri's gone. A lot of people saying Walker because of the pace.
Well, you don't need that pace.
You don't need pace on five-a-side. Yeah. No, the distance isn't there, is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a decision between Stones and Laporte, and I think I'm going with Laporte because his weaker foot's better. Is the weaker foot stronger?
Okay.
I felt like I'd gone the other way then.
It's very close between them. I like Laporte. I thought we had a really good season last year. Yeah, and I'm to be honest, considering that's like probably like the 10th pick or something, I'm quite happy with Laporte as my centre back.
Yeah, I'm left with not a huge number of options, so I'm gonna take Ederson at this point.
Ooh.
Yeah, but the thing is, you said they can't kick, so what's the point?
Well, he's still like out of the three keepers, he's still I think the best shot stopper of the three, and I think
not to the extent where don't you still need like a defender or something?
No, I've got Cancelo.
You got Cancelo. Well, I mean, I can't see him put his right leg behind his left leg and try and long barrier somebody one more time. So that's the reason I didn't have him as my last line of defense, but fine.
Yeah, cool. Then I'm going to go with Jack Stephen as long as he's on this club. Yeah, I'm going to stick with Jack Stephen right now.
Yeah.
And that leaves you, Sam. You have to take Scott Carson.
The gold.
Because you need
I could take a kid.
He could.
The thing is, is Scott Carson still going to be fine for five-a-side? Surely.
Was it Edison recently who said that Scott Carson always wins the five-a-sides in training?
Well, there you go then. Scott Carson is. It was either him or Kieran Slicker, who I think might go on loan this summer. A bit of bonus information that will break the City transfer wheel for you. Carson then. I'm fine with that.
You've got five players now. So with everybody that's left, who's left? I think it's the options I've got are Walker, Zinchenko.
There's a lot of good players left.
Yeah.
This would be these five would be Stones. A good five.
Stones, Ake,
Sterling.
I don't think there's a midfielder left. I've got Sterling, Palmer, yeah. With Haaland in there, I'm gonna stick Zinchenko in again. And so I'll have Kinsella and Zinchenko playing behind Grealish, playing behind Haaland.
Your team's horrible, mate.
I know. I went third.
Yeah, true.
I can't see the balance in there.
I didn't think it was possible to pick a bad five, but I think you might have managed it.
So, Sam, you've got Carson playing behind Laporte with De Bruyne and Gundogan and Mahrez ahead of that. And Paul, you've got Stefan, Bernardo, Foden, Rodri and Alvarez in your side. I think mine's the worst of the three.
Yeah. So the whole reason we're doing this, I guess, is because obviously on The Athletic last week, we had the five-a-side kind of tournament and I was just asked to pick five and I sent it to Nader because I was like, what do you reckon to this? Because obviously he plays five-a-side more than I do now and all the little things that you need and obviously different perspective on the City players and whatever. And mine was Edison, Rodri at the back. Initially it was Foden and Bernardo, but I'll put De Bruyne in instead of Foden and then Haaland up front. And people were like, oh, you don't really need Haaland. I was like, just behave yourself, basically. Like, of course. Like, I just want to see Haaland there. But basically the upshot was, even if you were to pick like the last choice five, which maybe not Mooney's team, but but if you were to pick like Ake, Zinchenko, Gundogan, or whatever, they're going to be so tasty in like small spaces and stuff. And it'd be like one big rondo. As long as you've got somebody, like I would put Sterling as like maybe in that kind of not last five, but not, you know, he didn't get picked in ours, did he? So, and that would still be an unbelievable team. So I was basically thinking, well, the competition here is actually, which is the best City team? So little did I know that there was actually going to be some kind of competition. I still don't know actually how they did it, if they simmed it online or something. But I was coming back on Thursday, coming back up to Manchester in the car. I was a passenger. You'll be glad to hear. Scrolling through Twitter and I saw the graphic. So obviously, you know, the picture on Twitter catches your eye first. And it was a Newcastle team. And who was it? But it was like Dubravka in goal, Dan Burn. It was Saint-Maximin, somebody else in midfield.
Bruno Guimaraes.
Bruno, mate, okay, fine. And Callum Wilson up front. And I was like, well, okay, that's a shit team, but fine. And then I read the tweet. And they won the whole fucking tournament. And like genuinely, my head is still not reattached. I don't know how it was settled. I don't know if it was voted for. And maybe we got loads of Newcastle subscribers and that sways the vote. But we haven't got more than we got Liverpool or United subscribers. And also, they beat Palace in the final. And I've not seen the Palace team, but my mate DM'd me while I was tweeting about this. And like the Palace goalkeeper, let me try and find it quickly. If you got 30 seconds, well, I found it already now, but you've got 10 seconds before I tell you the name of this Palace goalkeeper who was in the runner-up in this tournament.
Yeah.
His name is Joe Whitworth.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
Who, that's I a mean, football manager regen, isn't it?
Probably. Born in 2004.
And I mean, he's a football this manager regen.
Jesus.
And this is obviously no disrespect to him. It's disrespect to whatever fucking system we used. to decide who the finalists were going to be.
Yeah,
I mean, there's just no way that...
Sam, we have all played...
There's no way that my City team is worse than the nose.
Like, we have all played in five-a-side games where we have absolutely battered the opposition and just not scored.
I don't know how it worked. And I mean, I get loads of people saying, oh, agenda, oh, it's for Liverpool fans, it's for United fans, I'm cancelling my subscription or whatever. But I mean, if you want to cancel your subscription, then crack on because, I mean... I don't know how Newcastle have ended up winning that. It's ridiculous. And then there was a message in our work WhatsApp group, which has got like 150 people in it the next day saying like, oh, congratulations to Newcastle or whatever. It's like a bit of a jokey thing. And I just posted that Mourinho, if I speak, I'm in big trouble.
Can you get them? Could you get them to sim our teams and see who wins a three-way tournament between us?
I should really look into it if I'm so annoyed by it, because it's that thing of you complaining about an article without reading it. So maybe there's a very good reason, and maybe the algorithm automatically discounts all the best teams. That must be how it's done. I don't know. Maybe they split it into two, and that was like the championship competition or something. Because genuinely, I don't know what's happened there.
But I'm just thinking.
I think even your team, Mooney, would win that.
Yeah, I was just thinking. Oh. I might have a chance. Yeah. Right. Well, we'll try and work out who the winner of that is for next week. But for now, that's the end of this week's Wire Whizzles. Thank you to Sam Lee.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And to Paul Byas.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, David.
Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.